Hello and welcome to Sounds Like Canada. I'm Sheila Rogers. There are some people you encounter in life who make an indelible impression. Sharon McKenzie is one such person. She is a firecracker, a catalyst, Alka-Seltzer in flat water. She makes things happen. Sharon is a grade 6 teacher at Kidston School in Coldstream near Vernon, British Columbia. And I met her a few years ago on the job, but not in a classroom. She had installed her students in a chapel at a senior's home near Vernon, the Coldstream Meadows Retirement Community. The chapel became their classroom for a whole month while the children lived, studied, and worked among the residents of the home. Here's a recap of my visit to Coldstream Meadows.
Back to
Mr. Wilson, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
What has it been like having the kids around the home?
It's wonderful. It's really, I think, it's the most wonderful thing that ever happened.
Why do you think it's so wonderful?
Because I never knew what old folks were when I was a kid. And these kids have learned that old folks are still people. And they're sure good kids. And I enjoy them very much.
Have they taught you anything?
Well, yes. They make me feel younger.
That's quite a gift.
Yeah.
And you're how old?
96.
And how old do you feel with the kids?
Oh, about 12.
Mrs. Fraser, how do you like having the kids around?
I love it.
What does it do? How does it change this place to have them around?
Well, a place with children is always much nicer than a place without them, isn't it? They're delightful.
How do you feel about it, Flo?
I feel great. I feel real great about it. Years ago, I was a supervisor at the Deaf and Blind School in Vancouver, and there was a lot of children. Mind you, it wasn't as noisy as this, but the sign language came in good. And I used to get the kids in the gym doing things to each other, and they loved it. And From there on, I carried on with Scouts. I had three children, and we got into all sorts of activities. Yeah. And, of course, the kids went skiing, and I stayed home because somebody had to stay home to look after the broken legs.
Some of the kids said earlier to me that when they first came here, they thought seniors were boring and smelly. Did you have any misconceptions about the kids? Did you think they were going to be rude or...
No? Definitely not. I knew they were going to be just natural kids. Yeah. I've been making them all little gifts and little boxes. And they're looking forward to the rest of them getting them.
That's great.
Yeah.
Seniors at the Coldstream Meadows Retirement Community sounding very upbeat about the presence of children in their lives. But things weren't always so jolly. Prior to this immersion project, Sharon had found that nothing much came of brief, occasional visits of her students to seniors' homes. Both sides held the same preconceptions they'd held before. For the students, seniors were boring, slow, and sleepy. For the seniors, young kids were noisy, rude, and disrespectful. When the students, though, spent 5 weeks with the seniors, those stereotypes fell away, and in their place was a real bonding. This whole project is called the Meadows School Project, and it's now been running for 6 successful years. It caught the attention of the late June Calwood, and subsequently Governor General Michael Jean and Iona Campagnolo, the outgoing Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia. It also caught the eye of the filmmaker Jim Elderton, who made a documentary about the project called Whose Grandma Are You? The documentary had its premiere on Sunday afternoon in Vernon, and I thought that would be a good excuse to catch up with Sharon McKenzie, the founder of the feast. She picked me up at the Kelowna Airport, and we drove to Vernon, but stopped to have this conversation by a beautiful lake, where Sharon remembered the rocky beginnings of the program.
It was a difficult year trying to break through, and since then... What was difficult? Well, the seniors really did see the children as something separate from themselves. In all fairness, some of them had never had children, or they had not been around children for a long time. For the kids, a lot of them It seemed to be a time when there were a lot of families starting to break apart in terms of where they were living. The grandparents were not living in the same town as the adults anymore. They were having to go off to jobs in different parts of Canada or the States or of the world. And so a lot of the times the children were only seeing grandparents the odd time through the year. It wasn't as if it was like, oh, it's Sunday dinner, so our whole family gets together.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where we were coming into at that point in time. And so there was sort of a nervousness, I would say, between the two. It wasn't really because of the nature of the thing that we were actually going to a place that I knew about and I was taking children that I knew. There was a trust factor there, so they weren't worried that these kids were going to start stealing their purse or, you know, scaring them or whatever. And the kids really weren't against the seniors, but on the other hand, it was just a very fragile non-relationship is what it really was.
How did the relationship develop?
At that time, in that year, it was really quite a slow thing. It took us a long time to gain the confidence of the seniors and to realize that there was a benefit to actually participating with us. I mean, they didn't mind us being there. They didn't find us offensive, I don't think. But on the other hand, they didn't want to step across the boundaries to actually come in contact physically and verbally with us. And so we waited for quite a while. It ended up it was a couple of individuals, actually, in the senior end of things that finally decided that they would like to make that step and come in to our classroom actually and talk with us. And then they went back and they worked a very special magic within that classroom or within the seniors' home to get a lot of other people on board. Up until then, it had been kind of like audience and actor kind of thing. So the kids would go in and we'd do a song or we'd do whatever up on this little stage, and the seniors would sit and watch us and politely clap, and then we'd leave. And then that wasn't really what I wanted to get away from. That was the whole thing that we were trying to work away from. And so at that point then, when these seniors went back and started talking with the other seniors, then there was that beginning of the door opening and stretching out of the hand and saying, come on in and let's have a talk. And that's when the one-to-one and the two-on-one kinds of things started happening. And after that, it was just, your proverbial snowball effect. It just took off, from then.
What did that bond mean?
Well, I think, and again, it's really hard for me to think back to 6 years ago, because the situation then was so completely different. I mean, I would have never dreamt that this project would go where it has gone. And I suppose at that time, the bond was sort of based on the fact that you made it across the border, that they were actually talking one-on-one. And now there is just such a deep respect and understanding between the two generations in the things that we're doing. And that now I'm speaking, after having had several years of experience of us going back to the same site, different children every year, mind you, but some of the same children coming back from year after year as well. And so the bond became very, very important. And now it's quite funny, because, I mean, the seniors right now, we're going back on October 1st, and the seniors are so excited. I was over there the other day, and they just can hardly wait. They're wondering, like, they've been asking apparently all summer, when is it that the children are coming back? And my students, who, it's a new batch, they're just over the top. They can hardly wait. They're very, very excited. So they don't even know each other yet. So it's just so different from the way it was before. So the bond now is already kind of there, and there's just an expectation that it's going to go well. And all of those stereotypes that I had been so concerned about to start with seem to just not even be a consideration. I mean, it's just off the map. Nobody's talking about that anymore.
When you first brought up this idea to the people you had to get approval from, what did they think?
Well, I guess the thing that was really great about both my administrator and also the people who own the facility and the parents is that they held their breath. And in that moment, it gave them an opportunity to reflect on, well, how could this be bad? I mean, you're not doing anything ridiculous. It's something that really traditionally in the world has happened forever, young people attached to older people. And kind of coming back to what you asked about what did this bond mean, one thing that I've really found is that, the youth and the aged have so much in common. And I tried to bring that across to the people who were going to be the facilitators allowing this to happen. The fact that they both have time. I mean, kids really do have a lot of time on their hands. And, a lot of us really question some of the things that they do with that time these days. And seniors have a lot lot of time on their hands. And it doesn't matter how great the facility is with all the different things that are going on. They still spend a lot of time. Maybe they've lost a spouse and they're sitting, you know, in their room alone or whatever. But you can't be involved in crafts and things like that all the time. But you can be involved in just human contact all the time. And hey, facilities just can't afford to have one-on-one contact with their staff, with the people all of the time. And so I think that that pause to reflect on that alone, that they both have time, they could spend some time together, and what could be so wrong with that? And so it was really great. I mean, they were surprised. I'm sure I'd hate to think what they were really thinking in their real heads, but they didn't let me see that. They just were quiet, and that gave me enough time to kind of muster up enough courage to then go on with, well, this is the first step. This is what I think could happen. And then they opened doors, and then once the doors started to open, even though things weren't going really super smoothly in terms of the kids and the seniors connecting at first, just because of a shyness, really, there was a belief that this had to happen. I mean, cheapers, older people and young people always traditionally in the whole wide world, all over every culture, have always been connected somehow. So why wouldn't we be doing this? And so there was that kind of a trust, an incredible trust, and I appreciated it so much.
It's just the walls are down. The kids are in the community.
Yeah, and you know, it's just hard to really understand until you've been there and experienced it, how rich it is. Well, you know, that's not true, because if you look at your life and whether it's on, you know, going well or not going well, there's a richness to everyone's life. And if you dig really deep and if you, you know, are able to be supported by friends and family, that's a very rich position to be in. And I know not everyone in the world is in that position, but you know, if you are, you need to take some time to think about that. And, so what we're really doing is giving life an opportunity to happen. We're not really recreating anything. And you know, in terms of your whole idea of that letting the classroom walls fall down, that's true. And I guess that's the first thought that people have is, oh my gosh, you know, you're going to walk out of the school, and what will happen with education? Like, what will happen with their math and their science and so on? But gosh, the science is in looking at aging and looking at our bodies and how they change and how we can take care of them, and in taking care of them when we're young, how that can pay such dividends when we get older, and having the compassion for somebody who has had something go wrong with them, and like, why? Well, I don't know, just bad luck, right? And now they have to live with that. They can't see, or they, you know, they're not able to get up and walk and run, and so there's that whole just lived experience of being there, and somehow it just makes everything so much better, being together and suffering through some of the tough things. I mean, whether it's the kids that they've had a falling out with some of their friends and they're sharing that with the seniors, whether it's a situation that, you know, maybe their families are breaking up and those kinds of things that they're dealing with, or whether it's the senior who realizes that their best friend that has been in the home with them for 5 years just passed away last night, or that they've been told by their doctor that there's nothing they can do about the fact that they're really tired all the time and they are having problems walking to the dining hall without puffing and feeling palpitations, you know, so those kinds of things the kids and the seniors can share, very real.
June Colwood came into this equation as well, the great catalyst for social change and journalist. I don't have to identify June Colwood to this audience. I know that. But how did you two connect?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should ask that, because I know you figured in on this, and I'm not quite sure, but I do know that it ended up that June and I had made this contact, and I it seems to me that I had a booklet out of some information about this, and I sent it out to a couple of people, and I know that Iona Campagnola was involved in this discussion too, and fortunately, it ended up when I contacted June, she was aware of what was going on, and she wrote me back, actually, and she said, you know, this is just such a rich thing, and it has such a sound ethical base, and it should be something that goes right across the country. It should be part of what we do. And then I remember she said, well, you know, Sheila should talk to you about this. And I think that when it went through the CBC offices, the idea was that I was to come to the Kelowna studio and be interviewed on the phone. And I remember June saying, I told Sheila, you get up there. And so fortunately you did come, and it was absolutely wonderful, because then you were able to have that experience too. So that just enriched it for June and I. And we continued email contact, telephone contact, and I was fortunate enough to go out to Toronto and have personal contact contact with her right up until her death in the spring. And she was an incredible inspiration. She really believed in the project. And it was really sad because due to her health, she was in a very busy schedule at that, too. She was not able to come out and do a visitation while we were in process. But I did send her lots of video and pictures and so forth. And every time I'd send her a picture, she'd write back with this just great outflowing of love and just a real support of what we were trying to do and a real encouragement that this should be something that we should be doing right across the country.
I know she wanted to take it big, and then she died, and you didn't have that visit that you had really hoped to have. What did that do to you?
Well, we had talked about the fact that she would not be around, and actually it's kind of funny because one of her very last correspondences with me just before she passed away, I was to come out in May and spend a week with her, and we were going to go through the project and really try to develop some parameters for having it go into a framework that would go across the country. And she wrote me and she said, if there's any life in the old girl when you get here, we're going to dance around the maypole, and then as quick as we can, we're going to get onto the business of making this go across the country. So she always, whenever something really good would happen or whenever I'd have a setback, I'd pick up my cell phone. It wouldn't matter if it was recess or lunch hour or after school or 5 o'clock at night, and I'd quickly phone her or email her, and almost immediately I would get a response back. And it was never a super long response. Sometimes it was, but most of the time it was just, you know, get back in there and get fighting, and you know, don't worry about that. It's a stumble in the road, or wow, that's fantastic, here we go. And she always was just really there to bounce off of. And because of her own success in changing so many things that we really worry about in Canada and making us more aware of them and showing such great empathy, I really found her to be an amazing model. And I really had a difficult time with her passing because she had meant so much to me and to this project and was such a wonderful role model. But, you know, she still is a wonderful role model. And I think you and I have talked about how she's there. It's great.
She'd be kicking your... I can't even say the word now because you can't say bad words on the CBC between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. But anyway, your gluteus maximus, if you did not continue this.
Well, that's true. And I contacted her family and I said, you know, it was my commitment to her that I would continue my interest in it, which is great. And my passion for this is great as well. And I would continue to have her behind me and I would do this for her and for us. And if we are successful, and, you know, in my heart, I really, some things are happening in British Columbia now. Now the Ministry of Health in BC has taken notice of this project because it does improve mental and physical health of not just the seniors, but the children and the staff. It's just one of those welling up of wellness. And that sort of thing, I think, is really helping to get us a little bit further. Well, not a little bit further. It's a plunge ahead, really.
And you've been identified. This project has been identified as a best practice, right?
Yeah, it was identified, I think they call it, as an example of promising best practice.
Yeah.
So I'm going down to address some members of the ministry in October, which is very exciting for me. And the BC care workers are really interested. I've been speaking with their director. And, of course, you being up here this weekend, we have a full-length documentary, which has really just been a blessing. I spoke at a Rotary function, and one of the gentlemen in the Rotary, Jim Elderton, came up to me at the end, and he thrust a card into my hand of a movie that he was working on that was to be shown in a couple of weeks, and he said, as soon as I'm finished this movie, can you talk with me about making a movie about this? Because he said, you know, look around the room, there was wet eyes everywhere, just because it was just so full of emotion, not sadness, just this incredible happiness. And so about 5 or 6 months later, we kind of came in contact again, and he decided he wanted to do this full-length documentary. And of course, today is the premiere of it, and we're really excited. I've invited all of my students from the past 6 years, and you're here, which is really special. And it's just going to be, I think, the movie's wonderful. I've seen the second of the last rough cut, and it's gripping. He's just captured the story. I hate to even call it a documentary because you tend to think that's a lot of facts and figures and stuff, but it really is the story of the love. And if you could see the pictures of these faces when they're together, and the whole rest of the world just disappears, and it's just a child's face and a senior's face, and they're focusing on something, either one another or something they have in their hands. And one of my students from grade 5 a couple of years ago has written words and music for a song that's played during a particular sequence. And if that doesn't bring the house down, I don't know what will. It's just absolutely so touching. And it's from the heart. And what's really great is, you know, when I was contacting kids and phoning kids saying, would you come to this today, just sort of to honor you, because it's because of you that this project has happened. If you're the trust of your parents and you hadn't been there and the administration, this would have never happened. And especially with Coldstream Meadows as well, the ownership there. And you know,
this is the senior home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it is. Coldstream Meadows Retirement Community. And, you know, every one of those kids, they were just, yeah, this is just so great. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, yeah. Never. It was just so positive. And they may be, oh, yeah, about what was happening in the classroom that year, but not about that project. And so many of them, one of the boys in the movie actually says, and it's just, oh, it is incredible. He says that when it came time to come back to the Meadows in the spring for our 3-week stint after our 5-week stay in the fall, he said it felt like I was coming back to my real school. He said that school felt more like it did than my school. And I think one of the reasons is that there's just such a tight sense of community there, that you belong, and that, you know, you make mistakes and you do little things wrong, but it's not the critical atmosphere that you have in schools where, you know, you're always looking at your peers kind of jumping on you for things that you might say or do wrong. Instead, it's just this very understanding kind of atmosphere.
Well, here we are. What are we looking over right now?
Kalamilka Lake.
It's pretty beautiful. We've got to get to Vernon.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we've got a premiere that's going to be starting at 2:00 this afternoon. So, yeah.
Alley-oop, Sharon. Let's go.
Okay, here we go.
Sharon and I made it, but with not a lot of time to spare. There was an audience of 500 people at the Vernon Performing Arts Center on a sunny Sunday afternoon in the Okanagan. Sharon McKenzie believes this project would work in other communities, and so did June Callwood, who wanted to see it go national. Sharon McKenzie is acting on that as a way to honor June. That's it for Sounds Like Canada this week. I thank you for listening. Next week on Sounds Like Canada, we will begin a series called Embedded, stories about computers and how in the last 20 years computers have embedded themselves in every part of our lives and how some people have embedded themselves in computers. Before I go, just let me tell you some of the people who have listened to Sounds Like Canada this week. Dr. Jean-Michel Worms in Canmore, Steve Tripp in Kingston, Vittorio Canta in Sutton, Kimberly Simpson in Kirkland Lake, Claire Elisalde, I hope I'm saying that right, in Montreal, Sean Mulligan in Salt Spring Island, Gary Hornbeck in Calgary, Elvira Ganella in Halifax, Debbie Levy in Penetanguishene, John Langston in Ottawa, and Peter Larkin in Pemberton. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great weekend and that you'll tune in again on Monday. I'm Sheila Rogers. I'm out of here.